Powered by a 100% Australian electricity and gas retailer. That's Red Energy. Switch today. Robot Building Supplies. Robots got it. On SEN, Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Thanks for being with me. It's been a massive show so far. Greg Swan, the CEO of the Brisbane Lions, talking all things hubs and how good it would be if there is one or two in Queensland, talking about two hubs in Queensland, separating the players into nine-team lots and maybe using a golf course like Twin Waters or Royal Pines to house the players for a month and a bit. He also said that, and we're all talking about the COVID-safe app right now, he also said that he's pretty much going to ask his players, tell them, won't demand, but will tell them that they all have to download the app if they want to go into the hub. Here's Greg Swan on the app and the Brisbane Lions.
We have, well, I've downloaded it. I did it yesterday. We're not making them. It's just, you know, it's like anything. It's not a compulsory thing. But
what if you have, what if you want to go into the hub? Do you have to then download?
Yeah, I think you will then. And I think, you know, it's a bit like I was just going to say. We strongly advise our players safe to get the flu shot. You know, they don't have to, but 99% of them do because we say it's a good idea and get it done. So on the same basis, if you're in a hub, you'd certainly be downloading the app and you know, as part of the, as part of what you're trying to do to, you know, A, comply with the government's wishes and also just to, you know, keep everything as safe as you possibly can.
A little bit of Greg Swan, the CEO of the Brisbane Lions. Whilst in Brisbane, let's have a chat to Alistair Lynch, three-time Premiership champion and Fox Footy commentator before. In fact, Peter in Perimbe's on the line. Quickly, I'll go to you, Peter, before Lynchy. Welcome to you, Peter.
Hello, okay. Dwayne, how are you going?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I just want to make a few observations from New South Wales. Look, the AFL seems to be out of all the codes, probably in a better position than all of them to do whatever they're doing. And I think whatever they decide now will probably set them up for the next 5 to 10 years. You know, whatever decisions they make on the code and how they view the rest of Australia, they'll probably set themselves up for 10 years, 5 to 10 years. And they'll probably put a bit of daylight, depending on how the other codes go, between the AFL and the rest of the code. So the resources that are being pumped into New South Wales and Queensland and the four northern clubs, so along with the AFL, I think, keep doing that what they've done in the past, and if they continue to do it, will really bear fruit and be part of a strong AFL, you know, across Australia, not just in certain different parts of it.
Now, I appreciate your call in Perimbe in New South Wales, Peter. Thanks for jumping on the line. Alistair Lynch probably has a better take on that than me. Welcome to you, Lynchy. Firstly, great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining me.
Great to be on, Dwayne.
How close were you to the number one code in Queensland when you were winning your three premierships?
Oh, I think, I think it would have been a bit of a stretch to say we'll push rugby league out of the road. But I think Brisbane has a reasonably transient supporter base that goes between the codes. Now, the grassroots is rugby league, and Brisbane were pretty much challenging the flagship of the NRL, the Brisbane Broncos, for attendance each week. And so we're right up there, but no, I was probably sitting in second, just in front of the rugby union.
Had a chat to Greg Swan earlier. He was talking about, you know, the possibility of maybe Twin Waters or Royal Pines being used to house multiple teams of players so they can go back after training in the bus and have a round of golf or a swim at the pool. Are you hearing of what the hubs might look like or the venues in Queensland might be?
Not really hearing, just like what Greg was saying, you know, there's plenty of infrastructure up here. I mean, there's an elite athletics facility at Runaway Bay as well. You go to Maroochydore, there's a high-tech sporting facility that a number of the clubs go to now in pre-season, as well as Royal Pines and Twin Waters. And there's also the old Hyatt Coolum where Clive Palmer's sort of taken over. I'm not sure what state of disrepair that's in, but there's plenty of facilities up here. And listening to Anastasia Palaszczuk, the Queensland Premier, on the news this morning on Sky News, she alluded to, or she actually said that there'd been a couple of approaches from sporting bodies trying to get games up and going, and strongly alluded to the fact that it was the AFL. So sounds like the AFL are well down the track to have this as an option. And certainly that time of the year, the temperature would help with those facilities as well. I mean, like Royal Pines, for example, is just a walk across the road to Metricon Stadium or across the river. And so that's not far away. And, yeah, the Gabba's just 45 minutes up the road.
So you can see it happening?
I can see it happening. But also, I think Queensland realistically would be still, I think they'd sit second behind Melbourne. I mean, depends, you know, what the criteria and what the specifications of the hub's exactly going to be. But, I mean, you think Melbourne with the infrastructure down there and the fact that there's 10 teams in Victoria as well. So, I mean, if you have the hub here in Queensland, you're relocating 16 teams interstate, whereas obviously there'd only be 8 moving into Melbourne. So I think Queensland's a very strong, viable option, but I also see Melbourne as probably the number one seed at the moment.
Golf. You've been playing golf, Lynchy. You've been allowed to play golf the whole time, haven't you?
Yeah, we have been, and I sneak out once a week. I might start to stretch out to once a fortnight now because I'm putrid. I'm just getting worse, I think. But it is, I mean, with the restrictions, and as everyone sort of knows, the restrictions are pretty strong, and you don't get to do too much of your normal life these days. So to actually get out and have a game of golf and a walk around once a week is good. And you do see a few of the Brisbane Lions players out there. So we're in carts at the course I play at. You're in carts. You can't have anyone else in your cart. You have to play in twos. And, it's pretty relaxed. And the weather is starting to get really nice up here. So it's good time for golf.
Has it been hard to get on, or is it? It's members only, I presume. So has it been difficult?
Yeah, it has. You've pretty much got to, when the timesheet drops a week out, you've got to be pretty much right on the go to get in. It's hard to get a start. You've got to be pretty well prepared. And basically the courses around here are members only. So if you're a guest, it's a bit hard unless you've got some pool. And at a Brookwater golf course, they will sneak you on if you've got a member with you.
I noticed in WA they're allowing groups of 10 with personal trainers, and you know the more you see personal trainers with more gym equipment that are in the indoor gyms these days, outdoors on the lawn. So have you seen quite a few things like that happening with the evolution of people that want to do gym work but have to now do it outside?
Yeah, you do see a lot of it around, and I think everyone's, and it probably took a couple of weeks for people to start to get into their new routines and get out for probably more to the point, the walks in the parks and that sort of stuff. So it actually is starting to get reasonably crowded. But I think it's great to see most people, certainly that I see firsthand, sticking to the social distancing rules and doing the right thing. So I think that's been reinforced all around the country, and it's why we're in a pretty good state at this stage.
Hey, do you think it's going to be an advantage for the Lions or the Suns? Greg Swan kind of intimated that it might be an advantage for the Lions to play so many games at the Gabba. We don't really mind the Suns having a 2% advantage for a change anyway, do we?
No. I think, the Suns played against Port Adelaide in round one in front of no crowd and they got smacked off the park, so I don't think it was a great advantage for them. But no doubt, the Lions, who are a more experienced group than the Suns, playing at a ground that they've played a lot of footy at, that group now, I think it would be a reasonable advantage. I think they won all bar two games at the Gabba last year, so they're starting to get a bit of a turn into a bit of a stronghold again. So it would be an advantage for them, and a slight advantage for the Gold Coast Suns compared to what normally is the case. But I think the disadvantage for them is they're still such a young group, and so that young group hasn't sort of developed that elite training culture that some of the stronger clubs have, you know, that have been around the top of the ladder for a long period of time. So I think that those groups, the older lists, they've probably prepared themselves a bit better through this downtime.
And do you think that the players' goal kicking might improve? Sean Higgins suggested that it was improved in round one because it was a pretty small sample size. It might just be a coincidence, but he suggested there felt like less pressure on kicks at goal in round one. So the goal kicking did improve because of that.
I could see how it would improve slightly. And obviously, there's not too many people really improve their skill execution under enormous pressure. And when you're sitting in front of a crowd of 50,000 or 40,000 and either it goes silent or it becomes very noisy, it is puts a lot of pressure on players. And I think that's what we see on a regular basis now. And I mean, the round-the-corner kick, which the modern player has developed extremely well and practices well, and I'm all for that if they practice it, but we still see that executed from 15 metres out in a rush. I think a lot of players are pretty keen to get it over and done with. So I think if there was no crowds, a bit less pressure, only marginal, obviously, but I think it will improve some of the goal kicking. I mean, the biggest thing for people that haven't shot a goal, you want to take the shot. And I think we see sometimes week to week, there's players that actually don't really want to take the shot. So they get it over and done with it as quick as possible.
You kicked at 64% for your career, and that seems to be about exactly what the good goal kickers are kicking at now. Maybe a touch under, but most of the good goal kickers are hitting that early 60s right now in terms of their goal kicking. Luke Bruce last year was 66%, but Jeremy Cameron last year was 60%, even though he's 63% for his career. So about your rate, if I wanted to pull out more names, I could read them off one by one. There's quite a few. Tom Lynch, for example, at Richmond, 67%. And you look at Justin Dunstall, 66%, and Lockett, 69% or 70%, essentially the best of them. Do you think players have enough shots? And I don't know if you heard Nathan Chapman on the program earlier saying that if players were able to outsource some kicking coaching like they do with golf swing coaching, they might be able to actually improve 10 to 20%.
Yeah, I think there's still, obviously there's a fair margin of improvement left in goal kicking. I think it's, for me, it's more the mental side of things. I mean, the anxiety that you see on the faces of players when they're lining up to take the shot. I think if you can actually get to the stage where you're getting out of your head, and this is, I mean, I think in the early part of my career when I moved from fullback and went forward, I think at times, you're taking a mark 20 metres out, and they're the worst ones, the ones that everyone in the stadium thinks you should kick or you shouldn't miss. And if you're taking that mark and looking and thinking, geez, I hope I don't miss this, that's where you're in a bad state. I think my big improvement came later in my career when I sort of didn't think about the end result. So it was all, I got a bit mechanical. I mean, I wasn't a naturally good kick, but I got a bit mechanical, probably cost me 5 metres of distance, 5 to 10 metres of distance. But I became more reliable because I had a process down pat. And for me, the goal was a byproduct of getting the other things right. So I think the mental side of things is as much a battle as the physical and training side of things.
Talking to Alistair Lynch, 3-time premiership champion and Fox Footy's own as well. Alistair, what have you made of the argument about players, AFL players, because they're not attuned to it, not really, some of them not really wanting to stay away for 4 or 5 weeks at a time. We know with cricketers on tour, that's just what they do. And, an Aussie cricketer who goes to India for a tour, Steve Smith can't walk down the streets in India and go shopping for a T-shirt anyway. So, they're kind of in lockdown in their hotels, but they're attuned to it. Tennis players travel the world without their entourage for, months on end. Golfers likewise. What do you make of the AFL players, some of them being a little concerned about being away from their families for a few weeks?
Yeah, I understand the concerns and the questions they'll have. And I think as a lot of the problems with everything that we're dealing with at the moment is having that clear plan and sort of the light at the end of the tunnel. So I think the players are within their rights to be asking the questions. But I think once things are rolled out on the table and the plans are clear, they'll go along with what's best for the game. And I think you will see a huge majority of players embrace it and play their sport. And obviously there's a lot of people around the country restricted in their movements and restricted in their occupation. I mean, hearing of guys through some clients and work on an oil rig and based out of Tasmania, they've got to fly to Perth 2 weeks in quarantine, which is basically in your hotel room, then on the oil rig for 4 weeks, then back into Tasmania where you're in quarantine for another 2 weeks. So that's a big issue for them. But I think the players, they'll once they get all the information, they'll embrace this and know what's good for the game and good for the community to see footy back out there.
So the mining industry's people that you work with, and I know you work extensively in that area, they're just attuned to it. Is that how their families are attuned to it, so it's just their normal?
Well, yeah, and it's gone beyond the normal though, because normally say with that oil rig they'd be out on site for the 4 weeks, then go home and have a good break as well. But now with the isolation restrictions, especially around WA and Tasmania, that's changed a lot. So, I mean, a lot of people have had to adapt, or the majority of the population have had to adapt. And I'm sure the AFL players, well, they have already, and they will again. But once they sort of get the answers to some questions, and they probably can't get the answers just yet because the answers aren't there yet. So this is very much a moving piece. And, yeah, I think we've done so well because everyone's adapted so far, and but they have every right to ask the questions.
Tassie was making a heap of progress to get into the AFL a year ago. Lynchy, and I know it's part of your lifeblood of who you are growing up in Tassie. A bit of a setback, do you think, or do you think the dust will settle and there's still a chance in 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, I think they've put together a really good plan and presentation for the AFL that, you know, was compelling. I think it has been put back a little bit now. I mean, the pressure, I think still the pressure, when we think of the AFL competition as a truly national competition, I think more it'll be pressure on Melbourne clubs in time to relocate to somewhere like Tassie. So that'll be something that it probably is 10, 15 years down the track. But as I always thought, even over the last 6 to 9 months, it's something Tassie has to get right to start with. They can't go in half cooked to make sure that they get a team straight away as soon as possible. I think they're better off just taking their time, making sure it's a sustainable club for a long period of time. So, but to answer your question, yeah, I think it will be put on the back burner in the short term.
But you think there could even still be a relocated team scenario that it's not off the table completely in 4 or 5 years?
No, that's right, because I think one of the big issues that's coming out of this for the AFL and all sporting associations around the country is finances. So to sustain a, you know, vibrant national competition, you need you know, clubs that are pretty much, well, not self-sustainable because of the model the AFL has, but, you know, can fund most of their existence. And that's going to be tougher on Melbourne clubs. I mean, it's been a battle for clubs, and I saw it firsthand with the Fitzroy Football Club. And they weren't allowed to survive in their own right and forced into a merger. And I think that's where the stress will come, rather than sort of going to a 19th team. And especially the issue will be compounded on clubs going through these times now where, you know, money is very, very tight.
Absolutely, it is. Lynch, you're always great to have a chat there. I really appreciate you joining me. I might just play you a little bit of Stuart Lowe on his goal kicking as well, because he was on the program a week ago, and I reckon the repetition of the goal kicking, I would like to probably explore it at some stage with Nathan Chapman and a few more people. But I mentioned it a few times. So here was Stuart Lowe for those people who didn't hear it last week.
By actually seeing what I was doing from a different perspective, rather than being told what I was doing, suddenly I thought, okay, I know what I need to do. So yeah, we started to tweak it and change a few things. And I just got into a real routine of putting a mark on the ground, which I think's become a bit of a norm now, and really keeping my head focused on that spot. And much like a golf swing, I just stuck to that routine, which I sort of got comfortable with. It was repetition, Dwayne.
But your routine was to not think about it as much, Lynchy, without going mechanical, actually going in some ways the opposite, having a routine that was just automatic.
Stewie just mentioned then, and I hadn't heard that before, is I had to think what my issues were. I fell back on the ball and lifted my head too much, and my ball drop was an issue. So, like Stewie, I didn't mark a spot on the ground, but I picked a spot, just found a spot, whether it was a darker bit of a patch of grass or something, I'd kick from that spot. So that was my first point. I was going to kick from there. Measured a rough distance back. The next one is to make sure that I drop the ball straight onto my boot. So that was something I concentrated on, and then probably exaggerated the head staying over the ball. And if I got those things right, then the byproduct was, you know, getting the goal. So I didn't think about kicking the goal. It was just these 3 points. And once I nailed those, the byproduct was kicking the goal, and that seemed to happen more and more. And outside the fact that I wasn't allowed a lead at the Brisbane Lions, so I had to sit in the goal square, so I wasn't having a shot from too far out.
And how would you have coped with a month just with your mates if you had to go on your team back in the day? You had to go into stay at Royal Pines and not see your families for a month. How would you have gone?
Oh yeah, that'd be difficult, and especially with the guys that have the young kids, that's a difficult time. So, I mean, modern technology can help a little bit with that. But, yeah, that'd be tough. Thinking about the guys, you know, a lot of those guys, there's a handful that actually love their golf as well, which I did certainly when I was playing. So we'd spend a lot of time on the golf course. I reckon Chris and Brad Scott would be out there, if not daily, twice a day, I would have thought.
And you wouldn't, who would you have not wanted to room with, Acker or Leper?
there's a reasonable list. There's a few of the guys used to actually, when we, because we used to travel and we're in rooms of two, then Lee put a stop to that because you get guys that set their alarm for 6 o'clock in the morning pre-game and they're up doing stretches and all those sort of stuff. There's a bloke called Dion Scott used to play for the Brisbane Bears. He was a nightmare. He'd be stretching at the end of your bed while I was trying to get about 3 hours more sleep. So, yeah, big Frank Lepich, he'd be an interesting one. So basically, I'll stick with the Lions plan that we had, and single rooms would be a must.
Great to chat to you, Lynchy. Can't wait to work with you again for Fox in June or early July or whenever it's going to be. I'll catch you soon. Enjoy. Don't stick with that golfing. Don't give it up, mate, even though you're not swinging well.
Well, I'll chop them on Wednesday and I'll send you through the score.
All right, make sure you do. Alistair Lynch, three-time premiership star, Fox Footy Zone, speaking about Tassie and a few other things as well. You can check that out on the Dwayne's World podcast if you just missed it. John in Taylor's Lakes, I'm coming to you straight after the break. Mac has recognised those in the healthcare system that are working tirelessly to look after each of us and our loved ones at the moment. So to say thanks, Mac is shouting any healthcare workers a free small McCafe hot drink or medium soft drink until the 17th of May. Your calls if you want to jump in with John, 1300 736 736, the open line. Thanks to Werribee Kia. Your calls next.